The Dark Web Files. Exposing the internet's hidden underbelly.
What happens when the most immersive technology we've ever created meets the most hidden, lawless corner of the internet?
That's the question we're asking today. Because while we've been talking about the metaverse as this bright, shiny future, another one has been quietly growing in the shadows.
Welcome to the show. I'm Mark.
And I'm Rachel.
Today, we are going deep into a place most people don't even know exists, the intersection of the dark web and the virtual reality industry. We're calling it the invisible metaverse.
And Mark, this topic, it's one that's been on my mind for a while now. I've always been fascinated by how technology shapes human behavior, for better or for worse. And with VR, the potential for both is just amplified. The idea that there are entire virtual spaces built for criminality, hidden from view, it's genuinely chilling.
It is. For me, you know, I've been a VR enthusiast since the early days. I remember the clunky headsets, the utopian promises of new worlds for education, for connection. And to see that same technology now being co-opted, to see stolen hardware schematics and illicit software being sold on darknet markets, it feels like a perversion of that original dream.
It's a whole new frontier, not just for technology, but for crime. And that's what we're exploring. We're not just talking hypotheticals today.
Not at all. We're going to peel back the layers on what's actually happening in these hidden VR sectors. We're talking about everything from illegal, custom-built VR experiences to black markets for hacked accounts and stolen tech.
And to do that, we'll be speaking with cybersecurity experts who are on the front lines of this fight. And we've even managed to speak with a former insider who helped build some of these systems. The story they tell is, well, it's one you need to hear.
So let's start with that insider. Because that conversation, it really stuck with me. The way they talked about building these spaces wasn't like some Bond villain. It was methodical. Like an engineer discussing a complex problem.
Right? There was no bravado. It was all about solving for X. How do you build a persistent, untraceable virtual space? How do you handle transactions? It was a technical challenge for them. And that's almost more frightening, isn't it? The complete moral detachment from the purpose of the platform.
It is. And he described an ecosystem that is in constant, violent flux. We think of these markets as being stable places, but he said that's the biggest misconception. He talked about the early days post-Silk Road, when new markets would pop up constantly.
And disappear just as fast. He mentioned one, Utopia, I think. It was hyped up, based on another big market. And it was shut down by Dutch police in, what?
8 days. It's this frantic cat-and-mouse game. But it's not just with law enforcement. That's what I found so fascinating.
You mean the infighting. The scams.
Exactly. The exit scams. He brought up a marketplace called Evolution. In 2015, it was huge. It had half the market share of the entire ecosystem at the time. And then one day, poof.
It just vanished. And the owners took, what was the figure?
$12 million worth of escrowed Bitcoin. Just gone. Stolen from their own users. Their own vendors.
That is, wow. So the biggest threat isn't always the FBI. Sometimes it's the guy running the website you're using.
Often, it is. And that level of paranoia, that constant threat of collapse or betrayal, it fundamentally shapes the technology. It's what drove the evolution away from these big centralized markets, these single points of failure, like Alphabay or Hansa.
So, where did they go? If you can't trust a central marketplace, what's the alternative?
It becomes more diffuse, more decentralized. People started moving to platforms like Open Bazaar, or even just direct, encrypted chats on apps like Telegram. There's no central hub to take down or to run off with the money.
But that seems less efficient. How do you find vendors? How do you build reputation if there's no central site to host your reviews?
Well, that's the thing. Reputation becomes a form of currency in itself. The smart vendors, the ones who last, they operate across multiple platforms. They build a name, a brand, that isn't tied to one specific market. Their PGP key is their identity, not their username on dark market number 3.
So their reputation is portable. It has to be. to survive the next big seizure or the next big exit scam. It's like they've created a society with its own laws of physics, all built on a foundation of complete and total mistrust.
And that foundation of mistrust, it becomes the blueprint. It's not just a social dynamic, it's an architectural principle. When you apply that to building a virtual world, you get something fundamentally different from anything we're seeing in the mainstream.
How so? I mean, what does a metaverse built on paranoia actually look like? Is it just, I don't know, a darker version of a regular VR chat room?
Oh, it's much more radical than that. Think about the metaverse that companies like Meta are building. It's centralized. It all runs on their servers. They have the master key. They can delete your account, take down a world, hand over data to law enforcement. There is a god in that machine.
Right. A central point of failure, to use the term from before.
Precisely. So, an invisible metaverse, one built on the lessons learned from a decade of darknet market collapses, it wouldn't have that. It wouldn't live on a server. It would be peer-to-peer. It would live on the computers of the people using it, all encrypted and talking to each other directly.
Wait. So, there's no central place to raid? No server farm to seize?
There isn't one. The network is the place. The moment you log in, your machine becomes a tiny part of the infrastructure. It's less like visiting a website and more like joining a swarm.
That is deeply unsettling. The very act of participating makes you complicit in upholding the whole structure. It's like the world itself is contraband.
It is. And that changes the entire game for law enforcement. Let's say an illegal transaction happens in this world. A deal for stolen source code, for instance. Where did the crime occur?
I have no idea. Everywhere and nowhere at once.
Exactly. Is the crime scene on the buyer's computer in Germany? The seller's in Brazil? Is it in the encrypted data packets that bounce between them through a dozen other users' machines in different countries? The concept of jurisdiction just evaporates.
And what about identity? You mentioned the PGP key being the only thing that matters. In a fully immersive world, what does that mean for an avatar? For your virtual self? Is that just a mask for the key?
It's more than a mask. It's a vault. Our insider talked about this. They were experimenting with avatars that were, themselves, encrypted containers. Your reputation, your transaction history, your private keys for cryptocurrency, it could all be cryptographically bound to your avatar.
So to steal your identity, someone would have to, what? Kidnap your avatar?
Or break the encryption it's built on. It makes the avatar incredibly valuable. It's your passport, your bank account, and your reputation, all rolled into one. And it's not tied to a company like Meta. You and only you own the key.
This is spinning out in my head. We worry about our data being stolen from Facebook. But this is a world where your entire existence is a self-sovereign encrypted asset.
The implications are huge. For crime, yes, but for everything. What does a contract mean in a world like that? What does ownership mean?
They're building answers to those questions. They're using smart contracts to act as the escrow that a centralized market like Evolution used to provide. The code becomes the arbiter of the deal, not a person who could run off with the money.
So they're literally building trust out of code because they have zero trust in each other. That's the paradox at the heart of all this.
That's it. That is the entire engine of this shadow world. It's a system of interlocking, cryptographic promises designed by people who assume, as a baseline, that everyone is out to get them. And what's really unsettling is that, in a way, it's a more resilient model than the one we use every day.
More resilient? How can a system built on that level of cynicism be stronger?
Because it's anti-fragile. It's built for failure. When Facebook's servers go down, the platform is gone. When one of these peer-to-peer worlds loses 1,000 nodes, the network just routes around them. It heals itself. The architecture anticipates betrayal and collapse, so it can't be killed by them.
And we're just talking about the architecture. We haven't even touched on the psychological impact. What does it do to a person to spend significant time in a world where your avatar is your bank and every interaction is a potential threat? Where there is no law, only code and reputation.
I don't think we know yet. That's the grand, terrifying experiment, isn't it? We've created the ultimate libertarian frontier, but it's populated by people trading in stolen data and worse. It's a perfect system for an imperfect species.
And it makes me wonder. You know, we started this by talking about the perversion of the utopian VR dream. But listening to all this, I'm not sure it's a perversion. Maybe it's just an acceleration. Technology doesn't change who we are. It just removes the barriers to us being who we are.
That's a heavy thought. That this isn't an aberration, but an inevitability. That for every bright, shiny, corporate-owned metaverse, there will always be an invisible one, growing in the dark. Not as a bug, but as a feature.
And it's not going to stay in the dark, is it? That's the thing that's really sticking with me. The principles they're pioneering, decentralized identity, trustless transactions, peer-to-peer worlds, that tech isn't inherently evil. Activists in authoritarian states could use it. Journalists. People who need that kind of privacy for good.
So the real question becomes, what happens when the walls between those two metaverses start to crumble? When this technology forged in the crucible of the darknet becomes user-friendly enough for anyone to access?
When you don't have to be a criminal or a cypherpunk to step into a world with no rules. I don't have an answer for that. I think that's the question that should keep us all up at night.
I think you're right. We've been exploring the invisible metaverse today, but it feels like we've only scratched the surface of what it means for our future. A future that is coming much faster than any of us are prepared for.
Thank you for joining us on this journey. It's been a lot to process.
And I'm Mark. We'll see you next time.
Stay safe out there, in all the worlds you inhabit.